laid out another line coming back and built a cabin or lean to at the other end so it was all fixed up. It had been good near a month since I'd come up or since I'd started trapping. I figured I could use one more day, and I decided I'd go downriver just to see what things looked like, and no hurry, no anything. Well, I went out to hook up that morning, and I had a little light sled, and 22 inches wide, but only about 7 foot long. I had a big sled from a freight. Winter was going to drive the old leader, because it's been a long time since the pup had come up river and didn't think he would follow the trail. So I started after to hook up my old leader, and he acted awfully funny. Generally, he was so anxious to go, but this morning he just didn't seem to want to go at all. And I'm kind of screwy about anything like that. When a dog acts like he don't want to go, especially the leader, why, it just makes me think a lot. That's all it do. I can't help it. It may be screwy, but I just can't help that to feel that way. But the pup, he was plumb ready to go, so I just hooked up my five young dogs to the little light sled. Started downriver, I got to where I'd come in and spoke to the pup, and he took right off on the trail. No sign of it at all. It snowed and blowed. River was hard, good going. And he just took that trail and kept it like an old dog, you know. And boy, I was proud of that little leader. I was just tickled pink, that's all there was to it, because I just didn't think he'd do it. And we'd made about 5 miles, I guess. Just jogging along, maybe 8-10 miles an hour, and I was enjoying it, and the pups was too, and he was traveling right close to the bank, and turned a little corner, and there was two moose, a cow and a calf. And boy, did things happen in about 2 seconds and a half. They was about 150 yards ahead of me when I first seen them, and they started. The calf was in the lead, and boy, he was just a horner off. And the old cow behind, with her long, ugly trot, you know, and she would swing her head first to one side and the other and then look back, you know, and seemed to kind of enjoy it, too. Well, I just turned the pups loose. I didn't never pay no danger. I just let them go. It kept me pretty busy keeping right end up on that sled, because we was making time, I'll tell you. It just seemed to me like I was hitting the snow just about once every 10 feet. We wasn't gaining any on the moose at all. It's about keeping distance. And I figured pretty soon I'd slow up and let the moose go anyway. The dogs had their fun. And about that time, I see the cow and calf both fall. Just went down flat. Whoop, I said, glare eyes. Well, by the time I'd realized that, and the moose would get on their feet again, I wasn't over 50 yards. I kind of stepped on the brake just a little to kind of, so I wouldn't throw the sled out of balance and overtip me and the dogs too, and just slowed them up slow. And by the time we hit the ice, why, the moose was gone, doing fine again, slipping, of course, but not bad. And the dogs went to slipping a little too, but not bad. And about that time, my sled hit the ice and I had no brake. I just wore it smooth up in them mountains. And I was just as helpless on that ice as anything you ever seen. Well, I stuck my feet out both sides and slid them. I had moccasins on. That held them back a little. It was slippery on the pup's feet, too. And I was doing everything I could to slow up the pups. I knew there's no use speak to them because they just wouldn't mind me. Old dog of mine, but that wouldn't. I knew they wouldn't. And about that time, I see a big splash and the moose disappeared. Boy, they had went into an air hole. Well, I couldn't hold them, and I thought, well, gee, I'll tip my sled over. Maybe some will hold there. I tipped my sled on one side, had the rifle in the bottom of my sled and a piece of canvas, and that rifle just slid out of that sled, and away it went, us getting across the ice, you know. And I was still a-going, no stop. It didn't help a bit, that thing on its side, and I was getting awful close to that air hole, I'm telling you. Well, I saw it, just no chance to save my dogs. And I figured better to save me than nothing, so I just left the sled right on my belly, my hands out in front of me. Of course, I had on Siwash moccasins, or gloves, mittens, and they held pretty good on the ice, and I pressed down hard, and I stopped not 4 feet from that air hole. Well, I just looked up in time in my excitement and fright to see my sled go under the ice. The calf had already gone under. And the cow was right on the other side. Well, there was just a big whirl around in that, like there generally is in those big air holes. And the moose is on the other side, coming right around towards me in that current. But she soon caught up to me, and I never seen such eyes on an animal in my life. Boy, I don't know whether it was fright or what it was, but she did look awful. And she seemed to kind of turn like she wanted to come towards me. And her hips kind of swung under the ice and under she went. Well, there it was, about 4 feet from that water, and it began to slope down right there. And, well, I was just scared so bad. You know, a man don't think in a case of that kind. I've heard men say how much they thought and all about what they was going to do. And, well, I never do that. I was just scared, period. And without thinking, I just reached back and got my sheath knife out of my sheath. I stuck it in the ice in front of me, and I shoved with my other hand back, and I moved. I'd done it again, and I moved again. Well, I think I backed up 25 feet away from that water before I dare even turn around. Then I turned around and got on my hands and knees, and I crawled to the rifle. Boy, was that something to get hold of that rifle. It just seemed to help a lot, I'm telling you. Well, I sat there and got all shaky. Got scared then. That's the way I always do when anything happened. I get scared long time after there's nothing to get scared about. But finally I got on my feet and started back toward home. Well, that was the longest distance I'd ever traveled from their home. I'll tell you it was long. Of course, it was crushed and not bad. Well, I got home, and that old leader was just tickled to death. That's all there was to it. I never seen. He commenced to whine before I got in a quarter of a mile of the house, and he just pawed and jumped, and he was the ticklest dog I ever seen. Well, I'm telling you, I just wasn't tickled at all. I went into that cabin, and I just come out to feed my dogs. I didn't go on the trap line for 2 days. I was the worst beat man you ever seen, and just had too much trap line. That's all there was to it. Just more than I could work, and had to get rid of some of them. So I cut the trap line down to 4 days and went on trapping. But boy, that's just about the closest I ever come to losing my Pedro any place, and I just don't want it to happen again either. Now that dude is just another one of those know-it-all screwballs that you just run across every day, that man Olson. If he wants to see squalor, disease, rags, everything else, let him go to some of the western reservations where the do-gooders ever since the white man come here has been taking care of the Indians. He'll really see it there. The Eskimo is being done everything to possible to make him what he shouldn't be. And those kind of people are the ones that'll do it. If you'll give that little woman up there, if you'll just give her 100th part of the money that this screwball wants to take care of those Eskimos, she'll do 100 times better. Now, I don't know her. I have no idea who she is. Never heard of her. But she's some trader's wife, some school teacher, or some missionary. And she's got up there and found out what lovely people those are, how honest, everything. And she's just trying to protect her. It's a shame that such people as that can't be listened to. Now, we'll just take the Eskimo as I have seen him. Now, in one generation, he's been jerked from a igloo, sod house, or dugout up to a ice box and a radio and all of that stuff. In less than one generation, think of that. And what has been done, now there's good missionaries and bad missionaries. I've hauled missionaries for days through over hard trails and everything else to get them to the villages. Then again, I've blocked some, too, to keep them from going. They're not all good, just as all the traders are not good. But we'll take their religion, for instance. Now the captain can come up there and he'll tell the Indians they mustn't eat meat on Friday. Any other day's all right. The Adventists will come up, oh, you mustn't eat meat at all. The Protestants will come up there and say, oh, eat anything, anytime, all except that stomach. Don't eat that. That is wrong. Oh, you mustn't eat that. Well, that's what kept them people alive for ever since the year they come there. And they must do it. As far as unnourished children and that, it's the white man, that's all. Now, 90% of the Eskimo and Indian in the north are TB and syphilitic. The white man brought it to them. They've had no way of doing anything about it, and they've still got it. If that screwball wants to do anything, now they can cure TB and syphilis, let them send doctors up there and get it taken care of. Look at little Debesna Tommy. Three little children there that he wanted to raise right, and he was so anxious about those children. He wanted to raise them to be God's people. He had listened to the missionary, and his father had taught him his religion. What did he do? Crook his toe on the trigger and blowed his head off so he could go and see which one was right. Then he'd come back and teach his children. I have seen brothers selling their sisters on the streets because they're just all mixed up. They don't know any better. We have taught them such screwball stuff according to them. Now the father and mother, they will teach their child to be good people, good mothers, good hunters, be kind to the children, make everybody like them, and that if they're not good, why, the Wendigo will come and take their children off to the big flat country and make slaves of them all the rest of their life. What do? The white man comes in there, oh, there is no Wendigo, that screwball, you're foolish, don't listen to that kind of tripe, here's the thing, listen to this Bible. Well, that gets them all mixed up. Then the trader will come in, the unscrupulous trader. We have them. There's some good ones and some bad ones, same as everything else. And they'll ask this trader. They don't know who's missionary and who ain't and who's good and who's bad. Everybody's good with them. They're all good. They had their lives. They had their laws. They had their virtues. And they believed in them. They listened to them. There was no such a thing as juvenile delinquency or crime or anything else there. Everybody was good. So they naturally thought that all the white people was good, too. So the missionaries, if it pleased them to tell them their religion was right, they'd tell them. If it pleased them or to their advantage to tell them otherwise, why, they'd tell them that. It didn't make any difference to them as long as they got the money and got some fur and made some money. It's just been pitiful, bringing those people from nothing to trying to get them so fast. The old people will teach them one thing, the young ones learn another, and it's just a mess. Now they talk about nothing to do up there. Let's just take the reindeer, for instance. Now we've got reindeer, thousands and thousands of acres of reindeer range up there. There could be enough reindeer raised there to make every Eskimo in the north